Connecticut's infection rate reached 4.1%. That's double Monday.
That's not unexpected, but it still wakes you up like a cold shower. It's the highest numbers we've had since very early June. And that's why it's so important that we maintain all the social distancing and wearing the mask when you come and vote. And if you come in person, do that safely.
Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont says at least 22 more people are currently hospitalized.
This, as Connecticut Secretary of the State Denise Merrill expects over 1 million people to vote in person next week. She's asking voters to prepare for the polls by bringing their own hand sanitizer and keeping 6 feet away from others. Those who refuse to wear a mask will be allowed to cast their ballot at a safe distance from other voters.
Long Island's infection rate is about 1.1%.
This is C19, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut and New York region.
Coming up, who's voting absentee in Connecticut? Long lines on that slender island. And what will happen to nursing home visits when it gets cold? I'm Charles Lane.
And I'm Desiree DiOrio.
More than 450,000 registered Connecticut voters have already cast an absentee ballot this presidential election. Patrick Scahill reports that registered Democrats have requested and returned ballots at a much higher rate than Republican and unaffiliated voters.
Logan Dancy asked his students this fall to comb the websites of candidates for state senate in Georgia, Minnesota, and Connecticut. He was curious how candidate websites featured issues like registering to vote or requesting an absentee ballot.
One of the main things that the students found is that Democratic websites were much more likely to have this link to voter information than were the Republican websites.
It was an informal survey, but recent data from Connecticut's Secretary of the State show one of the two major parties is requesting a lot more absentee ballots. About 40% of all registered Democrats asked for one. That's almost double the rate of requests for registered Republicans and unaffiliated voters. But once an absentee ballot was requested, data show comparable return rates, about 75% for Democrats and about 65% for Republicans and unaffiliated voters. Mara Sutman Lee, an assistant professor at Connecticut College who studies election administration, says both parties have identified advantages to mail-in voting. But the way they're engaging with voters on the issue this year is different.
Democrats sort of have a messaging advantage when it comes to, we're in the middle of a pandemic. We want you to be safe while you vote. You know, we're acknowledging the science and the risks associated with the coronavirus. And so I think that not only is it a mobilization strategy for them, but it's also a messaging strategy.
About 1 in 5 of Connecticut's roughly 2.3 million registered voters already voted absentee. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Patrick Scahill.
Suffolk County's 12 early voting locations continue to see a steady stream of voters who want to cast their ballot ahead of Election Day. Voters on social media report long lines and hours-long wait times. Nicholas LaLota is the Republican commissioner of the Suffolk County Board of Elections. He says any voter who is online before closing time has the right to cast a ballot.
Their rights are preserved so long as they're in line, and they will be afforded the right to vote so long as they're in line by the times the polls officially close.
LaLota says voters should contact the Board of Elections and law enforcement if a poll worker tells them they have to leave the line before the polls close for the day. He says the board has not received any reports of voters being turned away before closing time. About 36,000 Suffolk residents have cast ballots during the first 3 days of early voting. Nassau County had 60,000 early voters. This tip came from ProPublica's Election Land tip line. Go to WSHU.org to leave a tip.
Coming up, visiting loved ones in a nursing home this winter. But first, headlines. Connecticut election officials say the number of registered voters reached an all-time high, and it's still going up. Connecticut Secretary of State Denise Merrill says more than 2.2 million active voters were registered by this afternoon, largely driven by a surge in voters between the ages of 18 and 24. She says that beats the previous record from 2008. Residents have until midnight Tuesday to register in order to vote at their local polling place on November 3rd. Same-day voter registration is available at central locations in each town.
New York State colleges and universities will require all students who live in campus housing to test negative for COVID-19 before returning home for Thanksgiving break. That means the SUNY system will need to test about 140,000 students over a 10-day period. Students who test positive for COVID-19 or are exposed to the virus within 10 days of Thanksgiving must quarantine on their campuses. All classes at SUNY schools will go fully remote after Thanksgiving.
New Haven's police chief says no officers will be disciplined for pepper spraying people at a protest in May, just days after the death of George Floyd in Minnesota. Several hundred protesters tried to force their way inside the police department. Chief Tony Reyes says officers pepper sprayed into the group to make them retreat. Organizers of the protest say the police report is an attempt to gaslight.
Nursing homes in New York were permitted to reopen for visitation in July, and since then, many have limited visits to outdoors. They keep families on lawns and patios while taking advantage of the warm summer and early fall weather. But now, in late October, Tom Dinky reports many loved ones have questions about what will happen as the temperature drops.
It's a warm mid-August afternoon, and Albert Poutler and his daughter Ann Poutler are getting ready to visit their wife and mother, Marilyn, a resident of the Elderwood Nursing Home in Lancaster.
So you see the yellow line.
Okay.
That's where we have to sit behind.
Elderwood at Lancaster is doing outdoor visitation only. They've agreed to bring Marilyn out to a screened-in porch, so long as Albert and Ann sit on the other side of the screen and behind a yellow piece of tape. They chat about Marilyn's day, reminisce about her winning $600 off a lottery ticket for her birthday this year, and discuss what they'll drop her off for dinner that night.
Bye, Mom, love ya.
Albert and Ann appreciate the half-hour outdoor visit. It's the closest they've got to Marilyn since the COVID-19 pandemic closed nursing homes across the country in March.
Bittersweet. So there's the excitement of seeing her, and then the 30 minutes goes faster than you could ever imagine. And then when they wheel her away, it's very tough.
But these outdoor visits may not be possible for much longer. The cold weather will almost certainly prevent nursing homes from bringing vulnerable residents outside for extended periods of time. Albert and Ann haven't been able to visit Marilyn since September due to COVID cases in her nursing home and are unsure whether visits will be indoors or outdoors once they can resume.
I hope to goodness that they have a plan in place because there's no way that we're going to have our loved ones sit out there and be cold.
Advocates are also worried whether nursing homes will offer indoor visitation once the weather grows colder.
It's the residents' right to receive visitors.
Lindsay Heckler is an attorney with the Center for Elder Law and Justice. She says the federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid issued guidance last month that nursing homes should allow indoor visitation. But guidance from the New York State Department of Health isn't as forceful. Also, while the federal government allows for in-room visitation, New York State strictly prohibits it.
Some nursing homes, right or wrong, are not opening up to indoor visitation even when they can allow for indoor visitation.
A state health department spokesperson did not respond to a question about how many nursing homes are currently allowing indoor visitation, but in a statement says they'll continue to monitor data and requests, while also recognizing the pandemic is not over. Bria Lewis, who, like Heckler, is an attorney with the Center for Elder Law and Justice, says families can advocate for indoor visitation by calling their state representative or just confronting the nursing home itself.
The Department of Health right now makes it clear that visits are allowed inside of a well-ventilated area when the weather is inclement. So residents and family members can present this notion to the staff of the facility and see what they can do in order to facilitate indoor visits.
For Albert and Ann Poutler, they're unsure what they'll do. Ann has been hoping New York will allow families to designate a family caregiver who can go into the nursing home. But after the recent outbreak at Elderwood, she's not rushing to get into a nursing home if it means keeping her mom safe.
Now I'm just worried that if they open the gates and let families in, that there may be a bigger problem. You know, we're basically, you know, I feel that we're playing Russian roulette, and at some point the ball's going to stop at room 204.
That was Tom Dinky reporting. For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or online at WSHU.org.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting local news on WSHU Public Radio. I'm Desiree DiOrio.
And I'm Charles Lane. We'll be back tomorrow.